910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Daria Aldinger. A group of Democratic governors say they were candid with President Biden about last week's shaky debate performance, and they say they're standing with him.
We know we have work to do. We know that as we're standing right here, we're behind. But we also know that that path to be able to make sure that we can pull ahead in November is real, and it's going to take all of us in order to make it happen and to make it work.
Maryland's Wes Moore, the White House continues to insist Mr. Biden will not end his campaign. It could be hot as a firecracker from the Pacific Northwest to the Southeast for the 4th of July. More than 90 million Americans are on alert for extreme heat. Two men were shot inside a mall in Riverside, Illinois, following an altercation between two groups of people. The Prime Minister of Haiti tells the United Nations Security Council the first wave of Kenyan police officers, part of a UN-backed mission to combat gangs, kicks off a new era for Haiti. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. President Biden tells Civic Media's Earl Ingram he knows exactly what he means when Donald Trump remarked about what he called black jobs during last week's debate.
He's talking about black jobs, meaning all the things that blacks can do are manual labor, menial labor. That's what he's doing. That's how he looks at it.
You can hear Earl's entire interview with President Biden Thursday morning between 8 and 10 across the Civic Media Radio Network. The long holiday weekend starts with some long car rides for many in Wisconsin. Here's Savannah Tomei Olson.
AAA expects we'll set a new record here with 1.6 million people traveling in the Badger State. Remember to check 511. Construction projects are paused across the state, but there may still be lane closures in work zones.
Savannah Tomei Olson reporting. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
100 days, 144,000 minutes. The countdown to the November presidential election is on, and Maggie Dawn is counting too as she continues her special segment, Biden's Top 100.
Having heard from each and every one of you, I should start talking about what President Biden is proposing us for his second term.
Biden's Top 100 continues. You're invited to be part of it too. Call or text the Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays starting at 2, across the Civic Media Radio Network and the app.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. The last several hours have been the most interesting of the 19 years I've been doing this. Got to be honest, one of the most interesting times ever doing this show. The email box blown away. I haven't had a chance to read all of them. I'm getting through it, and I will. But wow. I've been called everything from you're a true patriot and you get it to, oh my God, you're a horrible human being. I hope bad things for you. And these are my friends. these are folks who listen to the show regularly. These are folks who claim to be first time viewers and listeners. It's interesting that, you know, after all these years, especially the last three of advocating for what Joe Biden has done, being one of his biggest supporters, to now come to the reality that Joe's got a decision to make. And as I said on Monday, I stand beside him. I think he'll do what's in the best interest of the country and whatever he believes is that, whether it's stepping aside and saying, you know, maybe I've lost a step. And for the good of the party, you know, maybe we'll look in a different direction, or it's look, you know, I can do this. I'm going to pick up and I'm going to go. Whatever that is, I think he'll make the right choice, because understand, as I said on Monday, I believe Joe Biden is a guy who's going to do what's in the best interest of the country, not the best interest of Joe Biden. unlike the guy that he's running against, who it's all about him. And what I hate is when people go, well, what about? I don't care about Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a con man. He is a convicted felon. He is everything that we should not want in a president. So when someone comes on and says, look, I think our best chances of not having a criminal con man who now has the power to literally have someone killed on Fifth Avenue, maybe we should evaluate the fact that maybe the time has passed. To then have them called the kind of things, and it's not good. It's not. And this division, what's interesting is it's about 50-50 right now in the days, just the short days from that Thursday debate. It's about 50-50 of people going, no, no, we've got to stand 100%. And then you've got other folks who are going, yeah, I don't know how you recover from that. Now, as I've said, Joe Biden is the nominee. Only Joe Biden can say, we're going to step aside and let someone else pick up the mantle. I support Joe Biden. I'm going to vote for him. As Chris Hahn said yesterday on the program, even if Joe Biden was in a coma, I would vote for him over the criminal con man. That's the reality. Now, to have several people say that I'm un-American or, you know, whatever the craziness that came out, because I'm questioning what I saw on Thursday night and what America saw on Thursday night. This isn't about me. It really isn't even about people who consume this program. It's about that person who they don't follow politics every day. They don't make it their central mission to know what's going on day to day. They're leading their lives. They may catch 15 seconds here, 20 seconds there. When they see some of that video, because they didn't watch it, it could be devastating. And the people who are saying, no, we've got to go in a different direction, or people who are going, I do not want Donald Trump in the White House under any circumstances. Now, at this moment, the polls have not really tanked for Biden. There's unfortunately as bad as they've been. And I blame that on the corporate-controlled media and the right-wing media structure that has constantly, every day throughout his presidency, attacked him at every turn. But we're talking about in a presidential election, a handful of voters in a handful of states. That's the reality. It's not about the people who've got the hats. It's not about the red hats, the blue hats. It's not about the people who bought the T-shirts or the flags or whatever. This election is going to come down to those people that they don't generally pay attention until 2 or 3 weeks before the election. But if all they're hearing up until that is, Joe's too old, you're not going to get to all of the incredible accomplishments. And look, there have been incredible things. For instance, on Tuesday, they came out with a heat exposure standard. In this country, in 2023, I think the number was 2,300 people died of heat-related illnesses. 2,300 people went to work and did not go home simply because of the heat that they were working in. And they finally proposed a new rule that employers are going to have to come up with a plan. They're going to have to figure out a way to identify heat hazards. They're going to have an emergency action plan related to heat illnesses. And they're going to have to train their employees. They're going to have to train their supervisors. If someone is exhibiting symptoms, what do you do? How do you do it? Make sure that there's a place that you have for rest breaks, for people to cool down, provide shade and water, all kinds of things. Make sure that workers have the ability to become acclimated to the heat. You know, there was a story in Florida right after DeSantis, wiped away the rules that a couple of localities had put into place about heat, now gone. A worker, came, worked 4 days and died because They weren't used to it. All that stuff, we're not going to get to talk about because you're not going to get past the age thing. The emails that I've gotten from the folks who wear the red hats have all been about age. And you're playing into Trump's hand. No, I do not want Trump in the White House. And if that means being honest, and this is where we have to come back to being honest with each other. The guy who was there Thursday night did not look presidential. We have to be honest about that. As I said, I believe Joe Biden will do what's in the best interest of the country because that's what Joe Biden does. And his record is stellar. He has been the best president of my lifetime on labor issues, without question, hands down. That should be defended vigorously. But understand, Democrats aren't about one person. It's not about a cult. We've got a party that has their dear leader that is beyond reproach, and you better not say anything out of line or you will be canceled over there. This is about making lives better. It's about making the country better. It's not about one person. It's about the ideas. It's about the policies. It's about the direction. And Joe Biden has put us on the right path. So if he so chooses to say, whoever, Michelle Obama, Gavin Newsom, Shapiro in Pennsylvania, Gretchen Whitmer, pick up the mantle and go, then I will support that person. Because it's the policies, and I've said that all along. It's the things that he has done to move us away from neoliberalism, to reinvest in infrastructure, to spend money on reinvesting and reshoring manufacturing, doing the things that we've desperately, desperately needed to do. But I also don't want to give it all up out of blind faith loyalty either. There's going to be a moment where reality has to set in. And I get defending and being angry that someone's going to question your choice. But the reality is number one, keeping Donald Trump out of the White House. And number two, continuing on the path that Joe Biden has incredibly set. That's where I'm at. So angry emails, like I said, always go to the top. Please send them. I want to hear what you have to say. You can send those to rick@thericksmithshow.com. Maybe right in the subject line, I hate you or eat whatever. I want to see that. Everybody else, just send regular emails. I will get to them. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I got to tell you, you look at the ruling on Friday, basically dismantling the administrative state and agencies' ability to regulate what happens, in the workplace, in the environment, to consumers. One of the things that I haven't heard really talked about is the chilling effect that this will make in these agencies not making new rules. So on Tuesday, when President Biden came out with the heat exposure rule, immediately that's going to be thrown into court, and immediately they're going to challenge it based on this Supreme Court ruling. a couple of years of work potentially thrown out the door. And understand, not protecting workers. And here to share some thoughts on just how bad our Supreme Court has gotten, I've asked Andrew Craig to come talk with us. He is the editor over at the Justice Integrity Project. You can check out their work, justice-integrity.org. Andrew, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be on your show because you have such a unique audience, staying power and reputation for telling it like it is, when so much of the media is just on the one hand, on the other hand. But these are vitally, vitally important rulings. They're corrupt rulings that are going to affect virtually every American for decades unless people do something about it.
No, and you said corrupt a moment ago, and you look at all the stuff coming out about Alito and about Thomas, and you look at the stuff that's going on there and the Leonard Leo stuff, and all of this doesn't give faith in this court and the rulings that they have come down with over the last couple of years, especially given that Chief Justice John Roberts said that he believed in decided law, believed in stare decisis, and was going to call balls and strikes. This ain't balls and strikes, Andrew.
No, and it's part of a plan that goes back decades, and he's instrumental in it. He has kind of this nice choir-like, choir boy looking, at least when he was younger, visage. And I've often gone to St. Matthew the Apostle Church here in Washington, where each October they bless the Supreme Court justices, and they walk in looking very righteous and are praised as men of law or women. But this is a plan to undermine working people. It's funded by big, big money, and it's very, very bad. And it's almost indescribable for the mainstream media. And so they're not describing it.
Now, do you think that it's that they don't understand just how bad it is, or they, you know, to use the old phrase, they're not seeing the elephant? That they don't understand that these are just pieces in this giant puzzle of repealing the 20th century and putting working people back in desperate conditions, earning poverty wages and all of those things. Do you think it's possibly that, or are they complicit because they're the corporate-owned media?
It's more to the latter. And let me just give a little bit of background of what I'm drawing from. So I earned law degrees from both Yale Law School, University of Chicago Law School, worked at a major firm. Before that, I was a newspaper reporter covering federal courts for 5 years. And so I have a lot of mainstream background, but I underwent some whistleblowing investigative reporting experiences. And that's what I'm bringing to your show. The combination of mainstream, big time law, and kind of looking out for the regular person. And I can get into that later. But to go back to your question, the reporters, almost all of their organizations have been acquired by big conglomerates. And I not only lived through that, I wrote a book about it. It's called Spiked, How Chain Management Corrupted America's Oldest Newspaper. And I saw and documented how some stories are puffed up, some are suppressed or spiked. And many of us who are working in these organizations, we don't really know what's going on that much.
Yeah.
So this kind of goes back to your question. If you're working, chasing your own story, you kind of realize that the place is getting bought, but everybody says, just do your job. But then they say, well, that's not really a story. And what can you do? So I think that's a first-person lived experience, Rick, that they don't necessarily know, but they kind of know, but they can't do much about it. Let me give you a very quick example. And I'll name names. He's probably a good guy, but the Supreme Court reporter for the New York Times for a long time, Adam Liptak, he went to Yale Law School, as did I. And at an alumni session, he was talking about the court. And he said, well, you got the liberals and conservatives. And I went up to him afterwards. I wasn't trying to make a big thing. But I said, well, the liberals aren't really liberals. They're more centrist. And the conservatives are radical right. And he kind of said, look, we can't get into that. Everybody calls them liberals and conservatives. That's what we're talking about.
Because it fits the red hat, blue hat frame, doesn't it? That binary choice. Because look, immediately after these decisions, I got people saying, well, you know, you on the left, anytime the court does something you don't like, it's evil. And it's all this nefarious stuff. But when they do something you like, oh, they're good. And it's that binary choice that they throw at us. And it's that framing, I think, that is important.
Exactly. And so, given the importance of the issue, maybe I'm taking a casual conversation and sharing it with your listeners. The reporters probably wouldn't be happy about it, but we're in a historic crisis. That what they're doing is going to kill people. It's killing our U.S. Constitution. And we need your audience to be informed about it.
So let me ask you this, because
to be nice to people that we've run into, that we have conversations, it's really, really bad.
So when do the lawyers who are, you know, supposedly the defenders of that Constitution, the people who are fighting for rights, you know, when do we see that in that pushback in mass? When do people finally say, you know, it's not about red hat, blue hat. It's about, you know, saving the fundamental blocks of this wonderful experiment of self-governance?
Well, it better happen soon, because I used to be a boxer, and you know, normally you go out and fight and throw your punches. There was one situation, Rick, where I got myself into a situation boxing American against a kung fu champion, and it turned into an exhibition.
Yeah.
So I know what it's like to pull your punches and hope the other guy is in an exhibition. These guys are mostly pulling their punches, and we need people to hammer.
Yeah. Right, but here's now the thing, and this is where I give, you know, people like Antonin Scalia, Leonard Leo, and that ilk, I give them credit for being honest. They talk about the original intent of the Constitution. And we're seeing a lot of those pieces moving into place. For instance, I fully expect the House Republicans to not certify the election if a Democrat wins. They talked about it last presidential election, about having the House of Representatives decide. You know, the original intent mindset. I see that coming more and more into frame as the days and weeks go by. Do you agree?
Well, let me point out a couple things. That, you know, I'm an investigative reporter. I work with cutting edge, deep, deep, deep other investigative reporters. So there's two things that you mentioned. I'll just share a thought that might get some people thinking. Well, first of all, everybody, particularly these MAGA guys, talks about the founders, the original intent. Do you know what, Rick, they don't talk about when they're with their tri-cornered hats and founders stuff? They don't talk about the Civil War amendments that are part of the Constitution, equal protection, due process, that hundreds of thousands of Union soldiers paid with their lives to create that part of the Constitution.
Yeah, but Andrew, that's the part they want to get rid of.
Is that other stuff?
Yeah, that's the stuff they want to get rid of, the women's right to vote.
They want to get rid of.
Most certainly.
And here's one other small point, and we maybe won't get off into too much of the weeds, particularly since, you know, I know part of the family. But almost nobody even can say where and how Antonin Scalia died, or who was with him. And we take certain people and they're put on a pedestal. And I raised this with a liberal professor who was doing a biography of his. And I went up to him quietly. Again, I'm sharing with your listeners a private conversation. I said, well, he was with 36 people at a secret society meeting on the Texas border. Only three of those people have ever been identified. What were they doing down there? And some of them had cases before the Supreme Court. Is that in your book? And he, you know, I'm like the skunk at the garden party for privately raising that with him. But how the heck can you understand these people's continuing clout, reputation, and scholarship if you don't know how they lived and how they died in their spare time, and nobody wants to get into it?
Yeah, no. And look, you know, he was on the ranch of a billionaire. That's what we're told. And you're right, we don't know what was going on. And that's the problem that I have with all of this stuff that's coming out about our Supreme Court. So is it, you know, is this new, or are we just now becoming aware of it?
Well, different people have different timelines. Your statement about Scalia's place of death put you in a tiny 1% of the population, Rick, as I'm impressed but not surprised. Some people, it's a gradual awakening. And in my case, to go to a full-fledged departure from the mainstream to become a whistleblowing legal reformer advocate, I had to go through a process. And so part of the process was the Bush versus Gore decision. And part of the problem there is only a few of the Democrats fought for it. And Gore didn't really fight for it. He was too nice or whatever. We had to see only in retrospect that it was a put up job. And three members who helped orchestrate that are now on the Supreme Court: John Roberts, Amy Coney Barrett, and I think Alito. So what we're looking at is the results of a long-term plan to overthrow the Constitution. And some people are becoming aware of it. I'm certainly aware of it, which is why I'm so thrilled to be on your show. Yeah. But it's a gradual learning process. And the question is, what's anybody going to do about it?
No, and that's the question. Because look, you know, we went through this mental exercise the other day, and you know, what kind of a country would we be had Al Gore had the Supreme Court not put their thumb on the scale, and we actually counted the votes, and Al Gore was president in 2000? I argue a lot of the bad stuff wouldn't happen. I don't think 9/11 happens. I know we don't end up with the Patriot Act and war in the Middle East.
Exactly.
You know, we don't end up with this insane Supreme Court doing all this anti-democratic, anti-worker, anti-consumer, anti-civilian kind of decision making. So let me ask you a last line of questioning. How do we fight this? Look, this country has seen tough times before. I have a lot of my friends who are throwing up their hands and going, oh, we're doomed. We've been in tough times before. What do we do?
Well, first of all, get rid of what I call the bedwetters, including the people who have all kinds of crazy ideas about getting rid of Biden. But they are doing sound bites and op-eds. They're not thinking through the process that having some chaotic selection process to pick somebody who polls less than he does or less than Kamala Harris does, this is what the Republicans want. So people at some point have to think back to a team. And I know you've worked in unions and so forth, and sometimes you just have to work together and think, where do you want to go? And it's not always, oh, I have a favorite candidate who might get 8% or something. So people have to know what's going on. First, the threat is extreme danger. They want to turn this country into Mississippi with low wages, get the minorities and women back out of the workforce, except in the lowest jobs. We can't have that. But people need a strategy, and they need to know what are the vulnerable spots and hit at them and not be running around with solutions that just lead to chaos.
Justice-integrity.org, the website. Andrew Craig, the editor of Justice Integrity Project. I hope you check out the website. But Andrew, great talking with you. I'm sure we'll get you back here soon, because I'm sure this is not going to go away anytime soon. But Andrew, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Concerned or in despair. I've gotten a lot of emails from people in despair. That idea that he talked about, standing together, voting, that's the way to go. Want to hear your thoughts? rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. In the overnight, a mostly clear to partly cloudy sky, a little patchy fog forming, lows in the mid-50s, will have light winds. On the 4th, a couple of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise we'll see partly sunny skies. I said the lower 80s. Right now, it's 64.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I woke up today and deliberately, and I don't do this often, deliberately consume some right-wing radio. Some of the crazy outrage candy of the morning. Got a little of that. Got a little of the F channel. Decided to check out what kind of lunacy is over there. And then said, you know what, maybe not far enough. Actually delved into some of the real crazy cable fringe kind of stuff. And interestingly enough, not one of them, at least I didn't see it, not one of them talked about Joe Biden using his new powers, you know, to take out Trump or to jail journalists or, you know, just the crime in general. Not one of them seemed to be all that worried that Joe Biden was going to use these new superpowers. Now, my email box, my friends on the left, not so with Donald Trump. And even my right-wing friends, some of them are going, well, he might abuse it. He may. And here to share some thoughts on, you know, what this recent decision by our Supreme Court, by the nine in robes, have come up with. I've asked Devin Ombres to come talk with us. Devin is a senior director for courts and legal policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Devin, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be here. Wish it could be under better circumstances.
So, you know, am I being hyperbolic and going, hey, you know, I wanted to wake up and see if the right was going, you know, Joe Biden's now going to take, he's going to use these new powers and he's going to go on a crime spree. Because look, if you listen to him up until this point, you know, Joe Biden's this great mastermind criminal, him and the son, but didn't hear that today.
No, it's weird how that happens. And the fact that Joe Biden is a good and decent human being and a great public servant, he actually went on TV last night and said, even though the Supreme Court gave me all these new powers, I'm not going to abuse them. Unlike the other guy, because if past is prologue, then somebody who's already been convicted of 34 felony counts, facing 88 other felony counts, has been found to have been credibly accused of raping someone, whose charity has been completely demolished because it was committing fraud, that person might be slightly more scary than somebody who has been a public servant for 50 years.
Yeah, now, interestingly enough, my right-wing friends all came out and said, this is what you Democrats always do. This is what you liberals always do. You know, the Supreme Court does something you don't like. All of a sudden, it's the sky's falling. They're evil. Is this decision that came out on Monday that does now give immunity two presidents from this day going forward? Is this what we're afraid of? I should put it this way. Could this be what we're afraid of?
This could be what we are afraid of. Core constitutional powers of a president are now immune, full stop. Any other power that he can exercise as president gets a presumption of immunity, which means that any prosecutor after the fact has to overcome a lot of hurdles to show that they were engaging in criminal activity and that prosecuting them for it wouldn't hinder the ability of a president to exercise their powers, which means effectively that he can do whatever he wants. And if we're talking core constitutional powers, selling pardons, sure, why not? Seeking bribes for vetoes or the enactment of executive orders, sure, why not? That's absolutely immune. If he wants to direct people under him to commit crimes and then offer them pardons, that falls within a presumptive immunity. There's very little that a president with these authorities could not do. And, you know, July 2nd, two days before we celebrate our 248th birthday, where we got rid of the divine right of kings, the Supreme Court just decided that whole Declaration of Independence, no, that doesn't jibe with us.
But what do you say to the person, Devin, who goes, you know, all the things that you just enumerated, you know, the selling of pardons, the, you know, the vetoes that seem to be politically motivated, you know, people believe that's already happening, you know, because I, you know, on both sides of the aisle, people believe that, you know, you can sell off pardons and there's a quid pro quo there. Those could be prosecuted before?
Pardons could never be prosecuted, but now you can just be open about it. I think you look back in time in our lifetime, the biggest pardon scandal that occurred was Bill Clinton pardoning Mark Rich,
yeah,
at the end of his term. I'm young enough that I don't remember the intricacies of it. I just remember that it was a big deal, but it really hasn't been a thing. But at this point in time, Trump could literally say, Steve Bannon, January Sixers, I'm going to pardon you. And it's in with his prerogative, but also I want to enlist your help to go do things. So the quid pro quo is very much on the table. But the other thing that I think people need to think about if they think it's happening on both sides is, you know, educate yourself a little bit. Because if you listen to right-wing radio, good Lord, we're a bunch of child-eating pedophiles. But the evidence is never there. It's conspiracy theory after conspiracy theory with zero facts to back it up. And unfortunately, we live in a fact-based society, which is unfortunately part of what seems to be splintering the country. One side decides, I know better. I did my own research.
Yeah.
And everybody else is like, no, here's facts. I'm going to trust experts.
Yeah, I'm glad you hit that, because, you know, one of the things that came out of the pandemic that's driven me nuts is that phrase, you know, do your own research. And I'm sorry, you know, watching YouTube videos on the can with your mouth open is not research. But, you know, it's passed off as. And this is where, you know, this world of alternative facts comes in, that Trump and his ilk have brought into our politics. And this is what concerns me about this, because, you know, clearly you're the legal expert here. But as I was reading through the decision, did Roberts enumerate what an official act is, and did he lay out what it is and what it isn't?
There are core official acts which are set forth in the Constitution. But the thing that really got me is a throwaway line on page 20 that says the president has all the authority to discuss with the attorney general investigations and prosecutions and to direct them as the chief law enforcement officer in the country. So breaking that down into lay terms, that means the president has full authority to politicize and weaponize the Department of Justice. And the last time we saw that happening was back in the 1970s when a guy by the name of Richard Nixon directed his underlings to break into the DNC, tried to intimidate the FBI, use his powers to have the CIA undercut FBI investigations. And was using all of what would now be considered outside bounds of his presidential authorities and provide presumptive immunity. You could go out on a limb and say that the Supreme Court just legalized Watergate. And that's what we're looking at. Since that time, the president has dutifully remained independent of DOJ. DOJ does their own thing. They fill the president on what's happening, but he doesn't have a say. Now the president can direct the DOJ to prosecute his political opponents. He could have them start investigations into anybody and everything that he feels is appropriate. And if anybody refuses, he could fire them for refusing an illegal order or a directive to conduct an illegal investigation, and there would be no means to prosecute him for it.
Now, what's interesting is, as I'm hearing you say this, I'm hearing in my head all of my Red Hat friends who believe what you just said is already happening. They believe Biden sat down with Garland and Bragg in New York, and that they've devised this plot to go get Donald Trump, and that this decision is vindicating Donald, poor, innocent, victimized Donald Trump.
I mean, you can believe all you want if you listen to right-wing talk radio, as we're on left-wing talk radio. The evidence never matches the accusation, and the accusation is always a projection of what they're planning on doing. Joe Biden didn't run on a platform that subsisted of two blanks: retribution and revenge. And that's all I can tell that Donald Trump's planks are. That's the only thing he's running on at this point, without getting into the hellscape that Project 2025 will create.
Now you've opened up another can of worms, because, you know, now does this give him the ability to go and do all of those things that he said he was going to do, using Schedule F to fire all the federal workers and then make patronage great again by bringing in all these loyalists that are being vetted as we speak by the Heritage Foundation and others as under this Project 2025. This now makes all that legal, doesn't it?
Short answer, probably. I think the lower courts will be able to put speed bumps in the implementation of some of it. But as these trend up toward the Supreme Court, we have seen this Supreme Court side with him on the merits in every case before them. We have seen them side with the right-wing crazy A Fifth Circuit on the merits in every case where it got to the merits on that. I had a question earlier today, is Amy Coney Barrett a moderating influence on the more right-wing judges? And I think Amy Coney Barrett is whip smart. She's a hell of a writer. And she has been making the right noises about moderating and narrowing, calling into question some of the doctrines that the far-right justices have been using. But until she starts siding with the more liberal justices on the merits of cases that have really significant negative impacts on the American populace, then that hope is illusory. So I hope she moderates. I hope she's a moderating influence, but she's not there yet.
No, because I've been saying for the last several years that, look, Republicans want to repeal the 20th century, and they're going to use the Supreme Court to do it. We're going to go back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. And this, along with the decision last Friday, seemed to be moving us in that direction rather quickly.
Are you trying to get me to have your audience fall asleep by talking about administrative law? Because I'll talk about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire all day long.
Yeah, so, by all means, this is a labor program. You know, these my audience are working people.
Okay.
They're not in the red hat, blue hat world. These are folks who get up every day, punch a clock, and want to know that they're going to come home at the end of the day and be safe and be alive at the end of the day. That's what my audience wants to know.
And I want that for them too. And the Supreme Court apparently doesn't, because two cases that they just issued, Loper Bright versus Relentless, repealed a 40-year-old Chevron doctrine, and Corner Post, which came down yesterday, opened up the entire Code of Federal Regulations to challenge. If it was created in 1948 or 2018, it doesn't matter, because everybody has a bite at the apple now. And those two cases combined really limit the ability of agencies like the National Labor Relations Board or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration from being able to put in place things against labor abuses. You wanna raise minimum wage or the threshold to get overtime pay. You want to stop bad employers from wage theft. Good luck with that, because labor law relies on Chevron, and the Supreme Court just ended Chevron.
So we'll cut you off real quick. So, you know, on Tuesday, Joe Biden and the Biden administration announced the heat exposure rule to protect workers from, you know, basically dying because of heat exposure. What you're saying is that that's probably never going to make it to law because they're going to sue and this court will, well, who knows what?
I mean, I'm going to venture that they're going to sue in the Northern District of Texas, where there are six Trump appointed judges who will do anything that Leonard Leo and his ilk, who are, you know, payrolling these litigants, to do. So I would imagine that there will be a nationwide injunction, and then it'll go through the process. And to the extent that it gets to the court on the merits, you got best case scenario 5-4 and preventing that. And then you've got folks like I'm a Floridian, so I understand the concept of hot summers, playing football back in the late 90s, doing two-a-days in August. It ain't fun. And I wasn't working out on a rooftop, you know, rolling tar for 8 hours a day. DeSantis just wiped all that off the map. Yeah. They say they want democracy. They say they want local rule. But, well, why is it that when liberal municipalities or blue municipalities do things like create worker safety programs to make sure that people aren't dying of heat stroke, governors like DeSantis and Paxton rip those away from the localities where they're enforced?
Come on, Devin, you know those are job killers.
Yes, literally, they are killer jobs if you do it wrong.
That's the right turn of phrase. I say, you know, look, you know, they claim it's a, you know, job killing regulation. I said, what about the lack of regulation that actually kills people? So it seems to me, and, you know, help me here then, because, you know, and it seems like we're venturing back into not such a great era for working people. I've been saying for years we're going to head back to the Lochner era, where if you're desperate enough and hungry enough to work for poverty wages and deplorable conditions, that's your liberty, it's your freedom.
You and I are simpatico, sir, because I say Lochner and people glaze over. Yes, 100% Lochner. That's they've said that's what they've wanted for decades.
So real quick, explain to people in your view what that means for the person working on that roof, the person driving the truck, that electrical worker working on the power lines. What does that mean for working people when you say they want to take us back to the Lochner era?
So you think corporations have power over you now? Wait until the Lochner era is reinvigorated, because back then the court almost always sided with corporate interests and rights. And they would routinely hold that the government does not have the authority to protect individuals over corporate abuses. That's it in a nutshell. That's the Lochner era. And here's the kicker, though. You may think, well, we have access to the courts because we can sue and we can do class actions. Over the course of the last decade, this conservative court has been creating stronger enforcement mechanisms for arbitration clauses, which a lot of people I've contracted for when they're employed, which means that you don't get to go to court. You get to go to an arbitration that you help pay for, that they get to select the arbitrator who is in their pocket, because if they rule against corporations, they don't get hired anymore and they don't get any more money. And there is no right of judicial review in those cases. You think, okay, well, you know, if they're abusing us as a franchise, we can act as a class. Well, also, the Supreme Court has been narrowing the ability of class actions to move forward. They are stripping the little guy of the rights to enforce their rights against powerful entities. That is what this Supreme Court is doing. That is what they have been doing. This is enacting the right-wing agenda. They've been doing it for decades. Leonard Leo started the Federalist Society in the 1980s. This is their end game, corporate supremacy over everyone, and damn near monarchical power in a unitary executive.
That's the scary part in all this. And I keep saying, you know, whether they're going after workers, consumers are going to be there, and citizens. Look, you agree? Donald Trump said he loves clean air and clean water, but yet we're going to have now lawyers deciding whether we get that.
Yes. I hate to be all doom and gloom.
Hit me.
Because there are kind of a couple of bright spots in all of this. If Congress has a willingness to side with the American people instead of the corporate interest, which means we're going to have to get Republicans on this as well. But the way that the Loper-Bright case that overturned Chevron was written, the way that the Corner Post case was written, is these are not constitutional rulings, which means Congress can act. Congress can codify Chevron in some capacity. Congress can institute a very simple fix to the statute of limitations that would close challenges to all of the Code of Federal Regulations except anything that's been filed within the finalized within the past 6 years, unless it's as applied. I'm not going to get into that.
No, no.
But Congress could act with some relatively simple fixes.
Congress could act. You had me at, there's some things we can do. And then you lost me at Congress can act, because we can't even seem to name a post office anymore, let alone do some of this stuff of which you speak. But I guess this is why November matters. This is why elections matter. We need to be throwing some of the people out who have been supporting this stuff and getting both sides of the aisle, people in there who are going to say, no, we don't want to go back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s. But Devin, I appreciate the thoughts and the expertise. This, I'm sure, is going to get worse before it gets better. And I'd love to have you back again to explain what's going on.
Happy to do it anytime. Thanks for having me.
Devin Ombre, Senior Director for Courts and Legal Policy there at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Want to hear your thoughts. You concerned about where we're heading? You concerned that we're going back to the good old days? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. This day in labor history, the year was 1835. That was the day that textile workers walked off the job at 20 Mills in Paterson, New Jersey. But this was not a strike like we might picture one today, with burly men walking the picket line or women chanting as they carry picket signs. In Paterson, most of the strikers were children, ages 10 to 18. Many were young girls. Child labor was in high demand in the silk mills because of their small, nimble fingers. The children walked off the job because they wanted an 11-hour workday and a 6-day work week. They were tired of working 13 grueling hours a day, 7 days a week. Soon, their parents formed the Paterson Association for the Protection of the Working Class to support the strikers. There were no labor unions in Paterson back then. The company refused to negotiate. Women textile workers at other mills in the area also walked off the job. At its peak, 2,000 workers had walked out on strike. Finally, after 6 long weeks, the company agreed to a compromise. They settled on 5 12-hour days and 9 hours on Saturday. The children went back to work to a 69-hour work week. Strike leaders were blacklisted from the mills. This would not be the last time that child laborers took a stand on the job. In 1912, children workers were an important part of the famous Bread and Roses strike of Lawrence, Massachusetts textile workers. In 1933, children workers in Allentown, Pennsylvania sweatshops joined in a strike. Their participation led the governor's wife to join them on the picket line. The strikers there won an increase in wages and reduced hours. Children fought against their exploitation by taking to the picket lines. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Now, you know, look, with Devin got into the idea of the Lochner era, and we haven't talked a lot about that over the last year or so, but it's right now fully back on the table. The fact that they are destroying, they've destroyed the administrative state. It's coming. This idea that we now have no longer the unitary executive, we're going to have a king. I guess this is where this could go. And I've had people go, well, how's this going to matter to me? Why do I care? How's it going to affect my life? Because these cases, you know, they seem so abstract and so out there. Understand that we have in this country this kind of certainty. You know, I saw a small business group going, hey, you know, this attack on the administrative state is going to kill small businesses because big business is just going to run right over us. the regulations that are put into place about fair competition. You know, all that stuff is now on the table to be overturned. We're in the Wild West moments now. Where do things go? And this is that transition moment. We are now going to see all of the bad ideas that conservatism has been talking about for years, that we've been warning about. We're going to see a lot of this stuff, and we're going to have to live through it. And as I've said before, you know, if we're going to live in bad times, let them be now so that my kids don't have to suffer too much. But it's getting to be, this court isn't going anywhere for 30 years. I'll be gone by the time there's an opportunity to change how bad this court is. So it comes back to being cognizant of who we elect into the White House, who we put into halls of power, and then starting to think about what kind of a country do we want? Do we want to have safe drinking laws? Do we want to have clean air laws? Do we want to hold corporations accountable? Do we want to hold our president accountable when they're wrong? And there's a case, you know, making its way through the courts now where our billionaires, you know, Bezos, Musk, the folks at Trader Joe's, they're in the process of going, hey, Supreme Court, rule that National Labor Relations Act. Rule that unconstitutional. Throw labor relations in this country into chaos. Now, there are those of us who go, I don't know, that's a bad idea. Because maybe workers go, wait a second, there is no labor peace. Maybe we find militancy. Maybe we find our way back together. And this is where it's easy to have despair. It's easy to go, oh my God, the sky's falling. But it's also an opportunity for people to go, you know, wait a second, bridge too far. No, I don't want rivers burning. No, I don't want corporations to have absolute power. No, I don't want a president who can have someone shot on Fifth Avenue. No, I don't want a president who can crime at will and have no accountability other than maybe possibly an impeachment, which we saw during the Trump years, didn't happen. And this idea for the average everyday worker who's just going, look, I want to go to work. I want to take care of my family. I want to have some disposable income to do some nice things, a vacation every now and again, you know, some you know, decent clothes, decent place to live, food on the table. You know, a lot of people just want to lead a reasonable life. They just want to be happy. They don't want to get into the political wranglings. They don't want to have to worry about, you know, what the president is doing every moment of the day. They want to live their lives. And fortunately for a lot of people, they're able to do that. But understand what is happening right now is going to affect that. Once you start moving in a direction where government cannot enforce wage theft laws, where government can no longer ensure safe workplaces, where you can't propose a piece of a regulatory piece of enforcement that would protect workers from heat enforcement, from heat illnesses, that starts to break down. And, you know, we brought up the Lochner era. You know, that was an era in our country, 1905 to 1935, where our Supreme Court said government can make no law to infringe on the relationship between the employer and the employee. No minimum wage laws, no maximum hour laws, no safe working condition laws, nothing. Because it was all liberty of contract. You have the right, the liberty to make a bad deal. But the problem was, is everybody was living the bad deal. There wasn't that, I'll just go across the street. And what you had there is, you know, workers working 60, 70, 80 hours a week for poverty wages in desperate conditions to survive. And corporate America is saying, hey, that sounds pretty good to us. Sounds like it would be very profitable for us. We hear a lot of people complaining about inflation. Why didn't we hear for the last couple of decades, as wages have been declining and stagnant, why didn't we hear workers complaining at this volume? Well, because that didn't benefit the work of the investor class. This is where we got a lot of work to do, folks. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.